I invite you now to travel with me back in time, to the beginning of what we now call the Common Era, to the time of the Roman Empire, to a land called Palestine. The Roman Empire executed a peasant with an attitude, a peasant who refused to pledge allegiance to the empire, refused to regard Caesar as a god.
That's the Reverend Dr. Nancy Taylor. I'm Peter Wallace, and this is a new day of faith and hope. This is Day One.
Welcome to Day One, the weekly program that brings you outstanding preachers from America's mainline Protestant churches, sharing insight and inspiration from God's Word for your life. Here's our host, Peter Wallace, to introduce today's preacher.
Thanks, Sherry. We're delighted to welcome back to Day One today the Reverend Dr. Nancy Taylor, who for the past 11 years has served as the Senior Minister and Chief Executive Officer of Old South Church in Boston, a United Church of Christ congregation. Nancy is a graduate of McAllister College in St. Paul, Minnesota, and earned her Master of Divinity degree from Yale Divinity School and her Doctor of Ministry from Chicago Theological Seminary. A leader in a number of church-related and social justice organizations and initiatives, she earlier served churches in Idaho, Connecticut, and Maine. Nancy, thanks for being with us again, and a happy Easter to you.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here. Happy Easter.
Last week, you introduced us to the church you serve, Old South Church in Boston, and before you came there in 2005, you were the minister and president of the Massachusetts Conference of the United Church of Christ. What were your goals in that leadership position?
Well, you know, it's a denominational position. My goals were, some of them were large and some were small. One was to get every UCC church in Massachusetts connected by the internet. That was, you know, about 15 years ago, 2001, I guess it was, and we succeeded. Even if a church didn't have a computer in its building, there was somebody at home who could get a message from the conference office. We brought freedom schooner Amistad to Boston Harbor and remembered the story of the extraordinary story of the Amistad captives who revolted and who got John Quincy Adams to argue on their behalf and freed them. We landed a $1.5 million grant from the Lilly Endowment for Pastoral Excellence, which was really the beginning in some ways of a kind of renewal for the Massachusetts Conference in how we work with our clergy to encourage and support them today.
You earned your MDiv at Yale Divinity School, where you serve on the Dean's Advisory Council, and this year you are lecturing as the Luckock Visitor at YDS. What will you be focusing on?
Yeah, I'm going to be talking about what it is as Christians to be bound to this one old particular book. You know, the preacher cannot be freed from this book. This is what we preach from. This is the ground on which we stand. And it's a strange book. It's, you know, many books over centuries, millennia, and it's old and it's musty. And but what it is like to be really bound to this. This is, you know, we're not Unitarians. We don't get to preach from Thoreau or Emerson. This is our commitment. And the other thing I want to be talking about is genre. For me, everything depends on genre. And, you know, recognizing that Proverbs are proverbial, that Jonah is kind of slapstick, that, you know, the difference between legend and history and parable and psalm and sort of the genre can change very quickly in the middle of a book, in the middle of a paragraph, in the middle of a verse, and sort of adjusting to the genre and recognizing what the author was about when they wrote it in this way.
You also serve as the chair of the Transformation of Christianity Task Force at Yale Divinity School. Tell us about that work.
Yes, the dean's given me the small charge of Transformation of Christianity. our task force is... We look for the best and the brightest. We're trying to understand where Christianity is popping up here and there. Sometimes it's in old, strong, you know, great institutions, mm-hmm. but lots of times it's a little pop-up shop here or a house church there. We're kind of trying to look and monitor and learn from Christianity adapting and evolving in the 21st century and trying to be excited about that, trying to encourage it. And, you know, Yale Divinity School is a teaching institution, so we don't want to be teaching our students an old way of being mm-hmm. church if there are new ways that they need to be knowing about. So I think our job is to have our antenna up, our eyes and our ears open for where is Jesus, mm-hmm. like, where is their excitement about Jesus today in this country and really around the world?
When you were senior minister of First Congregational UCC in Boise, Idaho, you were involved in a number of human rights efforts and organizations, the Anne Frank Human Rights Memorial, Idaho Voices of Faith for Human Rights, and so forth. Why is it important for a minister like yourself to be involved in community issues such as those?
Just about the time I moved to Idaho, there was an anti-gay initiative placed on the ballot. Mm. And the initiative, if it had passed, would have enabled employers to discriminate on the mm-hmm. basis of gender identity. So if you were gay, they could fire you. If you were gay, they could refuse to rent an apartment to you. Mm-hmm. Why would I get involved? Because this is about people's lives. Mm-hmm. You know, people talk about issues. It's not an issue. It's about somebody's life. And there were in Idaho at that time, and members of the church I served, teachers who were LGBT who couldn't share their lives with their colleagues at work because of fear of being fired. So kind of improbably, the small percentage of kind of progressive Christian and other folks, the synagogue mm-hmm. and our church and a few others joined together, and we said, this is not kind. Mm. This is mean-spirited. And we defeated that ballot initiative. Another one came up, I think, the next year or within a couple of years. Mm-hmm. We defeated that. Another thing that was very present or is very present to in the state of Idaho are migrant farm workers mm-hmm. and who were treated poorly, had no rights. We fought and won for them a minimum wage, and they are now treated with more respect and fairness than before. So this really has to do with bringing my faith into the public, has to do with caring about justice for all God's people. Remember when God said to Moses, go talk to Pharaoh and tell him to let my people go. So part of my ministry in Idaho was talking to Pharaoh.
Nancy, how did you find your way into pastoral ministry?
I want Carl Barth from heaven to cover his ears. I went to seminary to become a theologian mm-hmm. and studied theology and was really interested in systematic theology and loved, you know, I don't know, Barth, Bonhoeffer, many. I just loved reading theology mm-hmm. and thinking theology. But I was also, while I was studying at Yale Divinity School, I did work in prisons. Mm-hmm. I worked for a group called Christians for Justice Action, and I interviewed detainees in the bowels of the New Haven court building. Mm-hmm. And I remember one time picking up a collection of sermons by Carl Barth called Preaching to the Captives. And this fabulous theologian, I thought he utterly failed in talking to the captives, to talking to real prisoners. Mm. I didn't think his words rang true. Mm-hmm. And I made a shift at that point in my mind and heart that the construct of theology was that could be beautiful, kind of like an architectural construct. It had to hit the ground. It had to matter in people's mm-hmm. lives. And that was the beginning of my shift into pastoral ministry.
Well, today is Easter Day, and the church celebrates the resurrection of the Lord. Your sermon is based on Luke chapter 24, the first 12 verses. Would you read the text for us?
Happy to. On the first day of the week, at early dawn, the women came to the tomb, carrying with them the spices that they had prepared. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb. But when they entered, they did not find the body. While they were perplexed about this, suddenly two men in dazzling clothes stood beside them. The women were terrified and bowed their faces to the ground. But the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? Jesus is not here, but has risen. Remember how he told you while he was still in Galilee that the Son of Man must be handed over to sinners and be crucified and on the third day rise again?" Then they remembered Jesus' words, and returning from the tomb, they told this to the 11 and to all the rest. Now it was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, and Mary, the mother of James, and the other women with them, who told this to the apostles. But their words, the words of these women, seemed to the men an idle tale, and the men did not believe the women. But Peter got up and ran to the tomb. Stooping and looking in, he saw the linen clothes by themselves. Then he went home, amazed at what had happened.
I find it interesting that Luke makes it clear that it was women who found the empty tomb, Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the other women with them, he says. And then they shared the good news with the apostles who really didn't believe them. But do you think that was intentional?
We know today that eyewitness testimony is notoriously bad. The criminal justice system knows that eyewitness, we all think we see things, but it's notoriously bad. But in the first century, women were not permitted to be eyewitness witnesses. They were not considered good enough, that they wouldn't see clearly enough. I think this is a wonderful story for a feminist, and that the followers of the first followers of Jesus, the first people who witnessed the resurrection, who got it, who understood, who heard and saw, were women. You know, a lot of women ministers I know just cherish this story for that.
Well, Nancy, we look forward to learning more about the power of the resurrection in your Easter sermon, Divine Comedy. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much, Peter. It's been an honor.
And if you'd like to listen again to today's program or read or share a transcript of Nancy Taylor's sermon, visit our website at dayone.org. Or for a free printed sermon transcript, call us toll-free at 1-888-411-DAY1.
Comedy. Definition. A drama in which the central motif is the triumph over adversity leading to a successful conclusion. In the literary sense, Easter is comedy. Easter is a drama in which the central motif is the triumph over adversity, triumph over crucifixion, over humiliation and death, leading to a successful conclusion, leading to resurrection, leading to the death of death. However, since the earliest days of the church, Easter has been understood as more than a comedy. Easter has also been regarded as a joke, a supreme joke, the best joke in all the world, and the last and best laugh ever. For us, these two millennia later, it's not easy to get the joke, because we know the ending. There's no surprise. So, in an effort to recover the surprise of Easter, I invite you now to travel with me back in time, to the beginning of what we now call the Common Era, to the time of the Roman Empire, to a land called Palestine. There was a gruesome, if inconsequential, incident of capital punishment. The Roman Empire executed a peasant with an attitude, a peasant who refused to pledge allegiance to the empire, refused to regard Caesar as a god. From Rome's perspective, this peasant's death was inconsequential and matter-of-fact. It was routine. There are really no records to speak of, other than the hand-me-down stories told by his little band of followers. There's no record that, in killing Jesus of Nazareth, Rome had wrestled down a mighty insurrection.
The Jesus movement, it wasn't mighty. It wasn't large. It was tiny. Nor by any stretch of the imagination was it an insurrection, an uprising, an insurgency, or rebellion. It was nothing like that. Jesus and his tiny band of fishermen followers, these were no armed terrorists plotting a takeover. They planned no kidnappings, no taking of hostages, no assassination of heads of state. They carried no weapons. They laid out no strategy. They had no plot to overthrow the powers that were. What's more, they had no manifesto, except maybe this: to love one another. No, from the perspective of the Roman Empire, the death of Jesus was inconsequential. A small cog in the vast and mighty machinery of the Roman Empire executed a peasant who had a weakness for love. But as far as Rome goes, the execution was not worth recording or reporting. So here's the joke. In fact, here's the first of two Easter jokes. The first Easter joke is on death. Death, far mightier even than the mighty Roman Empire, death which always gets the last word and the last laugh, death is made a laughingstock by Easter. In the Easter story, it is life that gets the last word and the last laugh. In the Easter story, the joke is on death, and death is silenced. Death is rendered impotent. In Jesus, death meets its match, and then some. So that's the first joke, the joke on death. And here's the second joke. And perhaps the best way to illustrate the second joke is to note what did not happen on Friday, what failed to occur this past Friday, Good Friday. On Good Friday, the vast and mighty machinery of the New York Stock Exchange failed to rally itself into business. That's right. On Good Friday, the stock market remained closed. It remained closed in deference to a Palestinian peasant, an itinerant preacher who lived over 2,000 years ago, among whose most memorable teachings is this: "Do not store up treasures here on earth, where moths eat them and rust destroys them, and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven." The New York Stock Exchange is frozen today, suspended in time, exactly as it was 4 p.m. last Thursday. This extraordinary annual 3-day closure of the mighty and massive machinery of the stock market is in deference to Jesus of Nazareth. Here's what I imagine happens up in heaven on every single Good Friday. I imagine that on the morning of Good Friday, Jesus' family and friends all gather together. Mary and Joseph, James and John, Peter and Paul, Lazarus and Martha and the Marys, and Bartimaeus and Nicodemus and Zacchaeus, all of them. I imagine they're all together in heaven on the morning of Good Friday. And at 9:29 a.m. precisely, Eastern Standard Time, New York time, they grow silent. All the saints in heaven grow silent, heads cocked, ears straining to hear, they listen for the opening bell. And when the clock reaches 9:31 a.m., and when the opening bell hasn't sounded, I imagine the friends and followers of Jesus and all the saints in heaven erupting into peals of uncontrollable laughter, bent over, stomach aching, rolling in the clouds laughter. A laughter of absolute and utter incredulity at the power and reach of Jesus and his teachings. In the Divine Comedy, Dante Alighieri tells of the night of Good Friday in the year 1300 of the Common Era. You know how it starts. In the middle of the journey of our life, Dante comes to himself in a dark wood where the straight way is lost. There, Dante meets the spirit of Virgil, who promises to guide him on a journey to heaven. However, the journey to heaven begins in the harrowing bowels of hell. The journey through hell is slow, gruesome, torturous. Dante makes his way along the way, seeing sights so agonizing and ghastly that they are forever burned into his eyes. But he journeys on, up and up and up and up. Finally, departing hell, Dante plods onward and upward through purgatory, up and up, onward and upward. And then, just as Dante draws near to the celestial sphere, as he draws near to paradise itself, he hears a faint and distant sound. Cocking his head, straining his ears, Dante listens, then smiles, nods to himself, and proclaims, "It sounds like the laughter of the universe." Eugene O'Neill, great American playwright and winner of the Nobel Prize in Literature, wrote a play called Lazarus Laughed. The play tells the story of Lazarus after Jesus brought him back from death. As Lazarus is the first person to return from the realm of the dead, people want to hear from him, to hear his story. They want to know, what was it like, Lazarus? In his post-death life, Lazarus does have things to say. Among them, he tells people there is no death. But more than what he says, it's what he does that convinces people. Lazarus laughs. He laughs at everything, even death. And the more Lazarus laughs, the younger and stronger he becomes. His home in Bethany is called House of Laughter. In the book of Ecclesiastes, the author writes, "There is a time for everything, and a season for every matter under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh." My friends, Easter Sunday is a time to laugh. It is a time to laugh at death, a time to laugh at empire. Because in the end, here's the thing, in the end, the joke's on them. In the end, God wins. In the end, no matter what, no matter what happens, no matter what you are facing, in the end, my friends, death is dead and God's got your back. Happy Easter. Let us pray. Dear God, although adversity is far too central a motif in all of our lives, we give you great thanks for the knowledge of a happy ending. Thanks be to you, O God, for Easter's victory and final word. Amen.
Our preacher today was the Reverend Dr. Nancy Taylor, Senior Minister of Old South Church, United Church of Christ, in Boston, Massachusetts. For a free transcript of her Easter message entitled Divine Comedy, call us toll-free at 1-888-411-DAY1. That's 888-411-3291. Or write to us at Day 1, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. Day 1 depends on the financial contributions of our faithful listeners. If you appreciate our ministry, please consider sending a donation. We're grateful for your much-needed support. Again, our address is Day 1, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. And remember, to listen again to today's program, share a sermon transcript, or watch inspiring videos, visit us online at dayone.org. I'm Sherry Miller. Next week on Day 1, we're delighted to welcome the Reverend Dr. Peter Marty. senior pastor of St. Paul Lutheran Church in Davenport, Iowa, and the publisher of Christian Century magazine. His message for the second Sunday of Easter is entitled, Believing is Seeing. Be sure to tune in. Nancy Taylor offers some final reflections on today's sermon with our host, Peter Wallace.
Nancy, what a wonderful take on Easter. Thank you. You pointed out that in the literary sense, Easter is a comedy because the central motif is the triumph over adversity leading to a successful conclusion. But even more than that, you said Easter is a supreme joke, the last and best laugh ever, a joke we might not even get these days because we already know the ending. First, you said it's a big joke on death. Through the resurrection, death is silenced, rendered impotent. In this world where we are surrounded by pain and death, how can we remind ourselves of that truth?
You know, part of the reality of the story is that life is full of adversity. Mm-hmm. And I know that your listeners, like my parishioners, experience a lot of adversity. And people over the world experience adversity. It's tough. Life can be really, really tough and really hard. But in the Easter story, what we have is a story where God says, I've got your back. Mm. I know it's hard now, but there is a day. There will be a day, a shining day. I'll have your back. It will be okay. That doesn't make it okay now, but it does mean that in the end, death is dead. This is our story. This is what Christians preach. It's our story, and we're sticking with it.
And there's another joke, one illustrated by the fact that on Good Friday, the stock market remained closed in deference to a Palestinian peasant, an itinerant preacher who lived over 2,000 years ago, and among whose memorable teachings was, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. That really is ironically comical, and this never would have happened if not for Easter. Sometimes I wonder if Easter, the resurrection of Jesus, has the same kind of impact on how we live our own lives. What do you think?
If you are not afraid of death, it will have an impact on our lives. So we have a benediction we like to use a lot at Old South Church in Boston. It goes like this. May you love God so much that you love nothing else too much. Mm. And may you fear God just enough that you need fear nothing else at all, even death. Death is the great fear for all of us, and it's a great motivator. But if death is not the end, if life goes on, if heaven is real, we get to live this life in a totally different way. We get to live with a tremendous amount of freedom, freedom to do and be for God, freedom to recognize that the limits of empire and power and money, these are so real. They're such hard facts in our life, but they don't last forever. Even they will, you know, become history.
Nancy, what's one thing from your Easter sermon that you hope our listeners will keep in mind this week?
I think the story of Lazarus, who laughs a lot. Laughter is good for us, even in the face of adversity, maybe especially in the face of adversity. Laughter physically, you know, sends enzymes through our bodies and makes us better. You know, it's hard to say that. I don't know all of the people who are listening, and I want to be sensitive that there are people for whom it's going to be hard to laugh. But to know that Lazarus suffered and died and laughs today maybe gives us hope that one day everyone can feel that laughter is out there, at least in the future for them.
Nancy Taylor, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Day One is the voice of America's mainline Protestant churches. Visit us online at dayone.org. Our program is recorded and edited by Donald Jones and produced by Peter Wallace. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sherry Miller, wishing you all God's blessings on day one and forever.